step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 874. I am Lisa Sheps, and I'm so happy to have back by my side my indomitable co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. If it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Just a sweet transvestite.
It is Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. On the show today, we have The Stage Austin and their show Cloud 9. Later on, we'll be talking to City Theater and their production of The Odd Couple, which is what many people call Nicole and I. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Amsterdam. Stick with us.
How about that? Well, babies, don't you panic.
It's nice to hear Tim Curry's voice on the little on the little hose.
I want to lend you his biography to read. I got The Vagabond.
I would like that. I'll add that to my list. I haven't had time to read anything.
I know.
Nicole Shiro, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us where you were for the past, month? 3 weeks?
I don't know. I guess 3 weeks, not quite 3 weeks.
You were internationally traveling.
Well, I was in the Atlantic Ocean for like 9 days.
Oof. Just swimming,
floating around, swimming, hanging out in the ocean. And then I was in the UK, and then I was in the France, and then I was in Holland or Netherlands.
The Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. And I was all over in places.
I understand you have a future trip to London coming up.
I do.
Are you going to do anything special while you're there?
I'm going to see Paddington the Musical. And you know how excited I am about that little bear.
Who does not love Paddington?
Oh,
the Lisa. Bear with his marmalade sandwiches.
Lisa, look at you acting like you're like the Paddington aficionado. Did you know he's from Peru?
I did.
I saw the
very first movie.
Okay, their books. Their books long before the movie.
I only saw the movie. Okay.
But yes, I'm going to see Paddington. I'm going to see something else yet. I don't know what yet, but I will be going.
You'll figure that out.
To London in September.
Let's introduce those laughing voices we've been hearing, but we don't know who they are.
Tell us.
Welcome back to the show, Tracy Arnold. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
And Mindy Keenan.
That is me.
Welcome back.
And fun fact, Tim Curry was in the running to be the voice actor for the Joker, but they decided he was too serious for it.
That was pre-accident or pre-stroke.
Yes, pre-stroke. Yes.
Pre-stroke.
Yeah. He was too what for it?
He was too serious. He didn't have the Joker's manic energy, so it went to Mark Hamill instead.
Wait. Wasn't the Joker Jack Nicholson?
Animated.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
There's movies, there's animation, there's TV.
Oh, really? Thank you. I did not know that.
Yes, so what branch?
You were so nice.
What branch?
Okay. The deadline for Tony nominations is done. It's over. It's in the backseat.
It happened.
But we have had, since last week, 4 new Broadway shows that open. So let's blast through them so we can talk about stuff we really want to talk about.
Okay.
If I can find it. So the first one to open was Beaches, which is a movie I only just saw not all that long ago.
It's so depressing.
I know. It's pretty bad.
It's one of those where I was like, why?
So, of course, is it why the movie or why the play? The musical.
Why the musical?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I mean, the movie is fantastic.
And guess what? Other people agreed with
yes,
you.
Yes, I know.
Of the 16 reviews on Did They Like It, 1 was positive.
Oh.
6 were middle of the road, and 9 were negative.
Yes, because we could have saved them all a lot of money and time.
Yep. Okay. Just well, saying. The review is written at the New York Times by Laura Collins Hughes. This, of course, is from the movie, or I'm sure there was a book by Iris Rainier Dart.
Like the mountain up in Alaska.
But the movie starred Bette Midler and Barbara Hershey. I'm guessing that's how most people know it. So it opened a week ago today on Wednesday at the Majestic Theater.
I do love that theater.
And this critic, Laura Collins Hughes, said it was a spectacularly unaffecting experience.
That's, and that movie's really good. It's really heavy, but it's really good. So you can't have an
Yeah, it was directed by Lonnie Price and Matt Cowart.
Oh, Lonnie, I'm sorry.
And the music, this is a musical. It was adapted by Iris Dart. She did the book and lyrics. They also had Tom Thomas with the book and Mike Stoller did the music. She went on to call it underwhelming. She said it I'm picking this up in the middle of the sentence. Underwhelming blandness in a condescending production.
Whoa, that's not nice.
Cece was played by Jessica Vosk and Birdie was played by Kelly Barrett. In the set, she said, had a cut-rate roadshow
look. Those are some ouchies.
Set was by James Dean. Not James Dean, sorry. James Noon. Noon Dean. Is there really a difference?
I don't know.
One of the things that they had a problem with is there was young actors playing them when they were young.
Right.
Who they said were great. So Cece was played by Samantha Schwartz. And they called her an entertaining and wide-eyed. They didn't say anything about her, but that she was good. And then the Birdie was played by Zaya Grace, and she was entertaining and wide-eyed. But they also said that the actors were Jessica Vosk and Kelly Burnett were too old to play the 20-year-olds, and they looked like, you know. They looked at it. It wasn't good. So they probably should have done like what everybody else does and do it in threes.
Probably.
Like they did with Cher and stuff.
Yeah. Not that that fared that much better for Cher. Yeah.
So here's how mad this review was. She says, the cast is fine. The orchestra sounds pleasant. Mucus is unmemorable. The lyrics are mundane.
Ooh,
yeah.
Yikes.
Not good.
No.
I meant to actually, I didn't do it this time. A lot of times when there's one outlier, I like to get the outlier and see what they said. But I didn't do that this time.
It's all right.
Hold on.
Because there's three more shows.
There is. So we need to get to it. But other outlets for this show, Entertainment Weekly's Sarah Heron said, Little Cece and Little Birdie, who make appearances throughout the show, ultimately become the highlight of the production. Frank Rizzo of Variety said the musical numbers have a pleasant old school Broadway feel mixed with pop and swing flavors. Are y'all Beaches fans of the movie?
The movie, yes.
Yeah. All I know is The Rose.
Oh, I was with you. That's all I knew. But yeah. I did see the movie and I liked it. I cried.
It's a touching movie. Yeah. It's a really good movie. It's just heavy.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
Which
is okay. I like a heavy movie.
Which is okay.
Yeah.
So,
but it's a really touching, sweet movie about friendship.
Mm-hmm. And dying.
And dying.
Yeah, but really, it's more about friendship.
This
dying just happens to be part of it. It's friendship and relationships.
So, spoiler.
Yeah, really.
Spoiler.
We all know. Wind Beneath Our Wings. We were tortured by that from there.
Yeah, we were. And I was doing industrial shows in that era, and Wind Beneath My Wings was in every single show
we
did.
Yes, we can thank Beaches for that one.
Yep. He alluded to us on when Tim Curry's rousing rendition of Sweet Transvestite, because the Rocky Horror Show opened on, I think, Thursday or Friday. Anyway, 17 reviews, 7 were positive, 8 were mixed, and 2 were negative.
I told you that last revival cast was the best. I don't know why they messed with it.
Well, but this one, they're saying good things about this. What you missed last week when we talked about Schmigadoon was like the Tony buzz for Schmigadoon is pretty incredible.
I know.
Nice.
Yeah. It's awesome sauce. And they're having
makes
no
me
fun.
Happy.
The fact that I've, you know what? I'm just going to be quiet because I'll start going nuts.
Yeah, don't, because we don't have time.
Nope.
Helen Shaw wrote the review for the New York Times. This is directed by Richard O'Brien. And of course, we We
which is a man who knows the show, just saying.
That's true. I would say he may have intimately involved in the show.
Yeah, right.
So, and it was obviously the cult movie in 1975. Started out, though, as a play, which I didn't realize until much
later.
Yes,
it was a play before the movie.
The Rocky Horror Show instead of the Rocky Horror Picture
Correct,
show.
But it started as a lot. I mean, I thought it was the movie first, but it's not. It was
years.
The musical first. It was at Studio 54 on Thursday, and the producers felt the need to put up signs to encourage decorum. Because during previews, it went a little crazy.
But they were so condescending. That's the thing. The signs just said, remember this is live theater or something like that. And it's like, we've had a whole bunch of productions of Rocky Horror where people interact in the same way they would
the movie. They sold participation packs at the last place where it was smaller at the Roundabout and the Revival with Dick Cavett. Yeah. And Tom Hewitt and Daphne and Ruba Vega and Jared Emmerich and Joan Jett. Like, I can go on. None of these problems. And so I don't understand this. And you took away everything from the show. It made me so angry when
they
did this.
Exactly. And it's more the condescension of it. Because it's like, okay, you don't want to. Probably it was the location and saying they don't want it.
No, it's because there's a lot of people on stage aren't used to live theater. Like Rachel Dratch and Juliette Lewis and all these people.
I think it's really more about they're trying to strike a middle chord because there's some audience members that don't want to be sitting next to that as well. So I mean it's both and.
I don't know. There was no problem with any of the revivals of it. So I don't know why it's now a problem.
Anyway, Juliette Lewis was in it. She sang a science fiction double feature.
Yes.
And so
Rachel got good notices.
She got, I was just going to say, and casting the comedian Rachel Dratch as narrator looks like Nobel-level brilliance.
Yeah, they were like, and I see her doing that part. She got really good notices on it.
Yeah, and she says her energy is that of a homeroom teacher wearing her baseball cap backwards, totally willing to play along with the kids and thus entirely deflating and hilarious. Frankenfurter was played by Luke Evans. They liked him a lot. Rocky was Josh Rivera, Riff Raff, Amber Gray, and Magenta is Juliette Lewis. So they liked Luke Evans.
Someone good was playing Columbia, too.
And I forget his real name, but the guy from What We Do in the Shadows, Guillermo, is the boyfriend.
Rocky,
Not Rocky.
Brad.
Andrew Duran played
Meatloaf
Brad.
Dr. Scott / Eddie. Yes.
Yeah, Eddie, that's his name.
So Brad was played by Andrew Duran. Janet was played by Stephanie Sue. What they said about Luke Evans was that, A, that he steered away from being a Tim Curry impersonator, which is good. He found his own voice. But he said, quote, his magnetism is off the charts. Pinkleton can more or less point him at the audience and fire him like a cannon. So I think that's basically it. And of course, Michaela J. Rodriguez is Columbia.
Thank you. I was like, why am I?
And I have such a hard time calling her Michaela J. I keep wanting to say MJ, but she has changed it. I just love it. So the end of the review says, so damn it, Janet. I'm glad the show hasn't entirely worked out on how to deal with the audience. So the critic, Helen Shaw, is kind of in your camp.
The 54 to do that renovation, you know.
The New York Daily News was the outlier that had a bad review. And it says, I fear the show has landed in a kind of less than comfy middle ground. Neither an interactive anything goes bacchanal, which surely would have been a better way to go, nor the traditional Broadway experience where the audience keeps up its smart mouth shut and listens to the performers. Neither side seemed to be happy with the compromise. That was written by Chris Jones. Dalton Ross of Entertainment Weekly said, Luke Evans manages to capture the character's scintillating combination of dangerous sexuality and emotional vulnerability, all while adding his own devilish spin. Adam Feldman of Time Out said, all the participants' principals have significant careers in film, television, stage, and some combination of three. Two of them are Oscar nominees, and they don't disappoint. That's it. That's where we're going to end this.
Okay.
But looks like something I might want to see it.
I don't even like Rocky Horror.
Well, you know what?
I'm shocked I don't at you wanna... saying that.
Well, because I'm thinking about the motivations behind my dislike of Rocky Horror back in 1977. And I think maybe I was misguided.
I wish we were friends in 1999. I would have taken you to see a really great revival.
I wouldn't have been ready in 1999. I think. Well, I tried to watch it when I was at my theater. I couldn't.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, not a big. Haven't been a big fan.
But
that's
love
a whole
that,
other
I love
story
that this
to go over
you,
with
though.
Me and my therapist.
Yeah, but I love that this has interested you. That's exciting.
It wasn't this, but.
The magic of theater.
The other thing that opened is Joe Turner's Come and Gone.
Do you know where he went?
Yeah. they explain where this... Joe Turner's Come and Gone is a saying. And I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but they talk about it in the review. It is, of course, August Wilson's Pittsburgh series. This one takes place in 1911. Debbie Allen directed it.
I love Debbie.
Yeah.
With Cedric the Entertainer and Taraji P. Henson.
The crazy combo. Fantastic.
Yes.
I know.
Amazing.
And then Debbie.
We
can call her the Debbie, by
It the opened way. On Saturday at the Barrymore. This is a revival. It was 40 years ago. It premiered in 1988.
That's a while.
Yeah. And then Ruben Santiago Hudson is also in it.
Oh.
Playing the old conjure man, Bynum. When I read it, I've not read this or seen. Has anybody seen it?
No. The show?
Yeah.
No, I know the show, but I haven't seen the show.
Well, I have not seen it. I just know of it and haven't
Correct.
Read it. But it reminds me of a kind of the Iceman Cometh kind of feel to
yes,
it.
Yes, that's kind of exactly what I feel the same way.
Yeah. So,
I'm interested in all this.
Yeah. I want to see it. They, of course, you know, Denzel has said he's going to put all 12 of these plays on film.
Oh, correct.
Nice. And he's done two, and he plans to do this one as well. And he typically does it with the Broadway cast.
I know.
Yeah.
So that means, you know,
that's
it'll
good.
Be there.
I mean, sometimes
to check
he's
out.
In that cast.
Sometimes
so.
He is. No complaints here for that. Helen Shaw wrote this review again, and she said, Debbie Allen keeps trying to find the show's truth in music. She starts the play with Taylor Jeremy's playing guitar. The first act ends in a climactic call and response, Juba, performed by nearly the whole cast. I wish these moments worked well as the more intimate ones. It's odd to me that Allen, who choreographed her first Broadway show in 1988, is least deft with large numbers of people on stage.
Hmm. Interesting.
An interesting criticism. Hmm. I think that's it. I think that's where we're going to stop.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't say. So again,
people like the Cedric.
People like this one. So people like the Cedric.
Yeah,
and the Taraji.
A lot.
14 reviews, 9 were positive. Wow. The rest were middle of the
I
road.
I was reading some really glowing stuff. I was like, go Cedric.
Yep. Deadline's Greg Evans said, lovingly and astutely directed by Debbie Allen, with a no weak link cast headed by Taraji P. Henson in a superb Broadway debut, Cedric the Entertainer and Ruben Santiago Hudson is nothing less than a full reminder of Wilson's singular genius for blending naturalism with more things of heaven and earth marvels.
Mm, that's nicely written.
Yeah. So that's good. And then the final Broadway piece that opened was The Lost Boys.
The long anticipated.
Which I have
ride,
never seen
never,
the movie.
That just still mind boggles me.
Am I the only one in this group?
I
seen
have
the movie?
Only seen the extended death scene of Paul Rubens.
Yeah. No. You got
Was Paul
the,
Rubens
the
in
movie,
it, I guess?
Yeah,
he
is.
Was one of the
He's
vampires.
One of the vampires. Okay. But it's very small. Yes, the
I
just recently watched
age.
It
I guess so.
In our 80s movie night. It holds
I'm
up really well.
In the 80s,
it's
yeah.
still a really good movie. You,
yeah, that's what
we,
I hear.
We all watch movies that are not of our time and of our era.
Well,
that's the point of filmmaking.
Yes
that's
and no.
what's so fantastic about it. Just like musicals. There are musicals not of our time or era. We like them. We watch them.
Okay. One thing I'm glad about Nicole, she's a woman with no opinions.
I have none.
No strong opinions.
Nope.
And she keeps her mouth shut about them.
I know. I have to work on that.
The Did They Like It aggregator had 16 reviews. 7 were positive, 8 were mixed, and 1 was negative.
Yeah, I'm not. I figured this is what was going to happen.
But by and large, it was positive. So this was this is a movie that was directed by Joel Schumacher in 1987.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's written by David Hornsby. Did you know that? Would you have known that? I didn't until I read it.
I mean, I'm not, but considering how he directed like the campier Batman movies, that seems right.
Okay. The whole movie is not campy. That's just it. Hmm. It seems like it's a campy movie, and it's not. It holds up to a really... Yeah. You go back and watch it, and you're like, oh, it is not all camp.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
So this was written by David Hornsby and Chris Hotch. The score and the lyrics are by The Rescues.
Yes.
Do you know them?
Yes.
I don't. it opened at the Palace, and it was directed by Michael Arden, who might go somewhere.
Diane Wiest is in the movie, Lisa. You like Diane Wiest.
I do like Diane Wiest.
I know.
They liked a lot. There's a lot of really good fighting, and so much so that they... there's aerial choreography.
So there is all in the movie, and there's a lot of fighting in the movie. And I was like, they have to fly them to be able to do this scene or this will not work. And when I saw what they were doing, I was like, okay, they got that right. So okay. I'm not surprised by how people feel. It is a cult-like following and yes. will keep selling out seats.
Had some heavy hitters. They had Shoshana Bean in it playing mm-hmm. Lucy. Mm-hmm. LJ Bennett.
That's the Diane. Lucy. She's playing Lucy. Sorry. She's playing the Jamie Gertz role.
I don't know what that means.
I'm just letting you know.
I don't know what a Jamie Gertz role is. I'm guessing that's an actor.
Square Pegs?
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, my goodness. Was Sarah Jessica Parker?
Oh, I like Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay.
Sometimes. The Rescues, by the way, you probably know this. Oh, wait. I'll test you. What are the names of the members of The Rescues?
Oh. Question,
good.
Lisa.
I'll tell you. Kyler England, Adrienne A.G. Gonzalez, and Gabrielle Mann.
Thank you, Lisa.
Or it could be Gabriel Mann. I don't know.
I think it's Gabriel.
And they said that in the review, it said there's a bunch of deep, great voices here, and the queen of them all is Shoshana Bean. But by and large, good. The one negative was AM New York by Matt Weinman. He said, you would think Broadway might have learned its lesson. Instead, here comes The Lost Boys, a musical adaptation of the 1987 vampire film, now at the Palace Theater, where Lestat opened exactly 20 years ago. Mm. If anything, The Lost Boys is worse than all of them. It arrives at the tail end of what may be the weakest season of new musicals in decades.
Ooh. That's an ouchie.
Wow.
Ouch.
And any hope that it might redeem the season quickly disappears.
I mean, there was a lot of problems with this musical coming out behind the scenes drama. So
yeah,
I'm not surprised.
I'm not
by
aware
it.
Of any of it. What was going on?
Lots. Just
Tell
lots.
Us.
No.
No.
And
no,
I don't need to get myself
you
in trouble.
You can't offer the teapot and not spill the tea.
Thank you.
No, I spilled the tea and just didn't bring the teapot. but yeah.
Okay.
So
we're running out of time. In other news, real quickly, Kimberly Akimbo, between its Broadway run and its tour, has recouped.
Isn't that wild?
For its investors.
Yes. Anne Morris. That's her name. I couldn't think of her last name. Morris, Lisa.
Okay, good.
That's the Kimberly Akimbo you liked.
Okay. And guess what what the Broadway show capitalized at?
Give me a number.
There's $7 million.
Oh.
Guess $7 million and you'll be correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The national tour played 61 cities in 79 weeks, and it will stop. It'll end its tour
Started
May
17th. Started in Houston, by the way.
Did it?
Yep.
Is that the first stop?
Yep. And that still had Carly Carmello. Carly Carmello was playing right before that, and then it went in. So there was one stop before Houston, and Anne Morris kicked it off in Houston then.
It's going to end in Hartford, Connecticut. All right. So I learned something yesterday, which I'm surprised I never knew. And I'm going to test you folks because you're all theater people. Where do we get the term spiking from? Spike tape. Where does spike come from?
Oedipus?
I don't know, but I'm assuming maybe like little pegs were
Ding, 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 ding. That's exactly what it is. So back in the day, they would put spikes in the dirt floor of the stage to mark where furniture goes. And for those of you who don't know, what spiking is now is we use tape, colored tape, to mark where furniture goes on a set. So when you go to the theater and you see little marks of tape, that's where people know where to put the stage. I never knew that before. And I, you know, I pride myself on knowing little.
I'm surprised at that.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, I never wondered. And then somebody asked me the other day, spike tape, why do they call it that? I went, you know, I don't know.
So you had to Google it?
I Googled it. That's funny. Googled it, and sadly, Google AI was the one that told me.
Ugh.
Yeah. The last thing I'm going to talk about is Flower Drum Song.
There's some pretty music in there.
There's some beautiful music. Yeah. That's a Rodgers and Hammerstein show from 58, I think.
It was rewritten
by David Henry Hwang in 2001. There is going to be another revival of it in Los Angeles.
Same, the recent one that David Henry Hwang did, or another?
He's updating it.
Oh, again. He's updating it again.
Yeah,
okay.
He's updating it again. And they're using, so in the 2001, they had new orchestrations, but they're going back to the Rodgers and Hammerstein orchestration.
Interesting. Oh,
okay. Yeah, but they are updating some of the things, you know, because there was some cringe factor.
Yes, it was.
What you mean? That's why it hasn't been performed. White guys talking about so Asian society might have been a little misguided.
Little cringe, but it's coming back, and I think that
they're doing it. What are they doing? It like the Hollywood Bowl?
I don't think it's Hollywood Bowl. Let me see if it says it here. It's East West Players.
Oh, they're doing it like a run at a theater. I love everything about this.
And East West Players, I did not highlight this, but I'm trying to remember. It's their 60th anniversary season. Oh, it's never been done there, and it is the oldest Asian theater company in the United States.
I love everything about this. Yeah. This is really cool.
Yeah. So that's good. They actually came to David Henry Hwang and said, they wanted to do something, and it was his choice, and he was thinking, he thought of M. Butterfly, he thought of Yellowface, and he decided on Flower Drum Song.
That's nice. Awesome.
Yeah, and I remember my parents played that soundtrack in my house growing up all the time.
And I'm not a big Rodgers and Hammerstein person.
Okay, y'all didn't hear that, but she said she's not a big Rodgers and Hammerstein person.
Normally not, but this music is beautiful.
Let's go off listening to a little bit of Flower Drum Song, and we will be right back.
100 million miracles.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We could have talked forever. Just in 5 seconds, Minnie Keenan has some news we want to talk about.
Epic the Musical, the rock opera that is an adaptation of The Odyssey by Jorge Rivera Herrerens. It is now getting an official animation that is going to be produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
Okay. That all went over my head, but well, I'm gonna say that's great.
It is. They are very excited. It was a cult, I'm not gonna say cult success, but it became a massive success over TikTok and YouTube. Oh. If you haven't listened to it, it is utterly amazing. There's not a song you skip.
It's called Epic.
It's called Epic the Musical.
Okay.
But yeah, rock adaptation of The Odyssey, very similar to Lin-Manuel Miranda in regards to kind of its tone. It is beautiful, and the fact that these little indie people who started out on TikTok and YouTube are getting an official Hollywood cartoon out of it is pretty amazing.
It's good. Hollywood Cartoon was my sorority name in college. So I'm going to reintroduce our guests for the actual reason they're here, and that is the Stage Austin's production of Cloud 9. And we are fortunate enough to have the director, Tracy Arnold. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
And Mindy Keenan.
That's me.
Who is playing what? Whom? Which you're playing two roles.
I am. In the first act, which takes place kind of in Victorian Africa, I play Maud, who is the mother of the matriarch of the family. And in the second act, which is 1970s England, although it's only 20 years later, I play Lynn, who is the matriarch's daughter's girlfriend.
Right. Tracy, Cloud 9 by Carol Churchill.
Yes.
Tell people what this show is about.
Mindy explained a little bit. That's about as far as it goes until you see it. It's by Carol Churchill, of course, a British playwright who is probably the most produced feminist playwright in the last couple of decades, for sure. It's a play of two acts. As Mindy was saying, the first act is set in colonial Africa in 1879, and the second act is set in London in 1979, 100 years later. However, the characters only age 25 years.
Right.
So we have some of the same character holdover from the first act to the second act. It's just a completely different style. Carol Churchill is a very interesting writer. She kind of poo-poos, if for a rather a crude term, but realism, and she likes to go as far as she can go to kind of flip the lid.
She flipped a lot of lids.
Yeah, she has.
So this premiered in 1979 mm-hmm. In New York, and there were lots of issues around gender, mm-hmm. sexuality, and
racism.
These things weren't really talked about back then, all that, not on stage. And she was on the forefront of that.
Mm-hmm. I think the British National Theatre says that she's one of the top, this piece is one of the top 20 pieces, or
yes.
one of the most prolific pieces.
I think it's her
pieces.
Most famous one.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah.
That and Top Girls, I think.
But yeah. they rated it like top 20 most important mm-hmm. pieces in the UK.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. I can mm-hmm. imagine that would happen.
So this is challenging. You and I were speaking before we went on mm-hmm. the air, and I had told you, and I believe my listeners know, that I worked on the original piece back in 1979 in New York, and I read the script before it ever went into rehearsal, and I looked at it, and I said, I don't know how anybody can do it. Tommy Toon, of course, was the director, and he was a genius, and so... It actually says it helps. I think he helped frame it in a way that then helped subsequent
right.
Directors and producers to put this on. It's an amazing, amazing mm-hmm. piece of theater.
It is.
And challenging. How did you feel
Very
about walking into this?
Well, it took me about 40 years to walk into it. The first time I saw it, I was 22 years old, so do the math. But I was as in awe as you were, and I didn't think I was ready to direct it until now.
Yeah.
And I had the right opportunity, and I got to pick a play, and Stage Austin is so generous as to let me do this. And I have had a lot of help with my collaborations with designers and Stage Austin and my cast. So yeah. that's helped a lot.
Well, Mindy, tell me more about your two characters.
So, as I said, Maud is the grandmother of the family, and Lynn is, you know, a divorcee mother coming into her lesbianism. The thing for me that I found, yes, the play focuses on sexuality, gender, a lot of that stuff. But for me, the big focus is grief. Because for both of the characters, and the play is a lot about relationships, is that Lynn finds out her brother dies. Maud, there's one sentence that shows she is a widow. And those two things essentially are very central to who they are and how they see the world. And for me, as a widow for a little over a year, so this pain is very raw for me, being able to try and figure out how the world works with the pain of such great loss is so important. And so that's honestly my focus when I do it.
Sure, that makes complete sense. And how has... How has the process, you're well into rehearsal at this point.
Oh, yes.
How has the process been for you as an actor and then also you as a director?
Mindy?
As an actor, I mean, the show is very, very ensemble. And so having those types of dynamics is crazy important. And especially for, like I said, my focus is on grief. And, you know, obviously it's going to flood in very, very much so. So having those core of people that are willing to hold you up when you're kind of breaking a little bit, trying to be honest and sincere, is really important. And I think we have a really good core of yeah. people willing to boost each other up.
And that's awesome.
Well, I think the hardest part for myself and maybe for my actors, I'm not sure, has been the idea of two completely different acts. The first act is a farce. It's comedy of manners. It's restoration theater. It's all of that. And then it's much more realistic in the second act. And that brings in the grief aspect that Mindy was speaking about. I've had to, you know, myself study way further than probably I normally would. Mm-hmm. Colonialism, what happened there, the bad things that happened in, you know, British Columbia, I mean, colonialism. And that was great. That was a great eye-opening experience for
learning
me to learn about
all the
about
horrible
that.
Aspects of colonialism. Yeah. Was great.
But it's a comedy. It's a comedy.
Well, it is a comedy, especially in that first act. Yes. And the you know, it's satire.
Yes, right. Satire.
So it was great. Mm-hmm. In your characters' minds, but it was not great, obviously.
Right. It's about the dichotomy of what they're saying they live and what they actually realistically live.
Yeah.
And as somebody who grew up in Nairobi, Kenya, you know, having that aspect of, okay, what is it to be a white person of privilege in a world of, you know, poverty, of oppression, while still trying not to be overcome by the people who know you are their oppressors.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now you have you've changed the opening date of the show, correct?
Yes, we have.
When do we open now?
We open next Thursday, the 7th, May 7th, mm-hmm. and we close on the 24th. So we run for 3 weeks now.
Oh, were you originally running for 4 weeks?
We were originally running for 4 weeks.
Look at y'all, show-offs.
I know.
That's good. What is there anything else you want to highlight on your production?
Would like to tell everybody they can go to thestageaustin.com mm-hmm. and go under news, and then there's a ticket link.
Yep. Okay. Well, that answered. That was a question
I was
going to ask. But no, that's fine. I just wanted to know whether there's any part of your creative team, and of course, the Stage Austin is just doing a lot of work these days.
Yes.
In their relatively new digs mm-hmm. on 290 and I-35.
Sterling Events.
Yep, Sterling Events. That actually used to be a Chinese restaurant.
It did.
That I used to go
it
to.
Did. I knew that. It That's why one... the huge bar.
Yeah.
It was a very big bar.
Well, great. So, good. Thank you all so much for coming on the
Thank
show.
You.
I always
Thank
love
you.
Being here.
I really appreciate it. Okay, that was Tracy Arnold and Mindy Keenan of the Stage Austin's production of Cloud 9, opening May 7th, closing on May 24th. For more information, you may visit stageaustin.com. And this is from the Broadway musical Ain't Too Proud, and it's called Cloud 9. We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. That was good. I working on Cloud 9 was one of my highlights.
I didn't know that you did work on that.
Yeah,
so, that is really cool.
I didn't do the I wasn't in the at the very beginning. I was a replacement because I was asked to assistant stage manage for the stage manager, whose name is Murray Gitlin. But in order to do that, the stage manager had to understudy, and I had to audition for Tommy
Tune. I was like, this is when you audition, but I never
And I did, and he said, you are not very good.
That's funny. I didn't put two and two together that was the show until you meant, yeah.
That's it.
So, but I knew the audition and all
so
that
So let's
stuff.
Do our little list of things.
Okay.
And since you have a correction, I'm going to let you start.
Oh, okay. Zach Theater, currently playing Charlotte's Web. That bluegrass aerialist version is playing through March 17th. No, May 17th. I had May.
Oh, yeah.
I had an
okay.
M date.
Gotcha.
Wrong M month. Also playing is Dear Evan Hansen through May 31st.
Ground Floor Theater has Pueblo Revolt. It opens on the, on the 7th in place of the 23rd. They will be on the show next week.
Yes. Currently playing is Austin's Playhouse, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder through May 17th.
I love that. I do
it's
like that show.
It's a fun show, right?
Yeah. I got to see the original.
You need to that get the good. Giggle sometimes.
Yeah, I've lost where I am. Oh, there we are.
La Fenice
has Bridgerdown through the 9th of May.
May, yeah. See, May, it's getting hard. I don't mm-hmm. know why. The Baron's Men, The Merry Wives of Windsor is playing through May 10th.
I guess we should say that's at the Scottish Rite.
It is.
Broadway in Austin in a week and a half. Has The Wiz easing on down the road from the 12th to the 17th.
Yes, and then we are going to be talking to the peeps. We have The Odd Couple coming, opening May 1st through the 17th.
Austin Shakespeare, I guess, doing Much Ado About Nothing. Oh, I thought we already said them. I was going to say they're doing it again.
No.
But it is. Austin. I get Austin Shakespeare and Austin Playhouse mixed up.
That's funny.
You know why?
Because they both have Austin in it?
Yes, you guessed it.
How dare they use the city name?
Much Ado About Nothing, In the Park, plays from the
7th. Shakespeare in the Park, Lisa!
To the 24th.
Yes. The Vortex, with Malin Malice Burlesque Beltane. That's fun to say, by the way. That opens tomorrow, the 30th of April, and runs through May 3rd.
And, of course, we have the Heller Awards coming up. That's the High School Musical Theater Awards, similar to the Jimmys. That happens May 6th at Bass Concert Hall.
Yes, and then those two little winter kids get to go up and participate in the Jimmys on June 22nd on the Minskoff stage.
There you go. Auditions. Cold Frame Collective is auditioning for Servant of Two Masters on the 3rd. The citywide auditions are the 30th and 31st of May. Changing Life's Youth Theater is doing a devised play about teen violence prevention. Those auditions are on the 14th of May. Bottle Alley Theater is auditioning for Passage on May 12th. And then Druid and Bard,
that's a great name,
are auditioning for Much Ado About Nothing on May 9th and 10th. And to get information about that one, you would go to druidandbard.com. All the others can be found at atxtheater.org. Are you ready for Today in Theater History?
I am, Lisa. Tell me about the things that happened.
Well, I can in a second. I've lost my place.
When you find that marker.
In my thing. I don't know where it
find
went.
Find the bookmark. Yeah. Find the bookmark.
This iPad just moves things around. This is why I miss paper.
I love paper.
I love
that's
paper
the
too,
ADD
but it is
in me. I have to write and use paper, and
it is so wasteful, though.
It isn't when you're studying or learning and you need to do this, things and
this,
write.
In
so
in this case, it's wasteful.
Okay, it's okay. Not in Japanese class.
Okay, here we go. Phew. So again, lots of shows opened now because of Tony season, and really. Good ones. Two shows that changed theater opened both on the same day.
Give me ahead of.
In 1996, Rent. And in 1968, Give Me Ahead of.
Hair.
Opened.
Beautiful hair. Shining, gleaming, streaming, flax, waxing.
Also,
I was at the opening of the Rent. That Rent changed my life living in New York at that time. Just saying.
Cool. Falsettos opened in 1992.
Ooh, that's a fun show.
Legally Blonde in 2007.
Okay.
Everyday Rapture in 2010.
I don't remember that one.
Did
we talk about that?
I think we did. I think we were on the air at that point. House of Blue Leaves in 1986.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Candide in 1997.
Oh, good old Candide.
And Bombay Dreams.
Oh, yeah, we talked about the Bombay Dreams.
Yeah, produced by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. It opened in 2004.
He has such a crazy catalog. Can we just talk about the things?
He produced it.
I know, but I'm just like...
I know.
All over. It's like he throws a dart and... I don't know.
He may go somewhere.
Jesus to Cats to Phantoms. Like, it's just two roller skating trains.
There you go. All right, well, let's listen to something from Bombay Dreams, shall we?
Let's.
This is called... Salam Bombay. We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole on KOOP 91.7 on your FM button pusher thing.
Yeah, that would be the Hornsby. Forgot the Hornsby.
No, that's a legal ID. I only have to do that once.
Oh, well, let's talk about it.
But
HD1, yeah. HD3 Hornsby.
There you go. You've done it. That's twice now.
Because special today.
We get charged every time we do that.
Do we?
Oh, you know what I didn't
do? What?
The opinions expressed on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily those of co-op, its board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, or staff. It's just us.
Just us. And so, Paddington, because Paddington came to
Paddington
today.
Has an opinion. See? So we have...
See? You love Paddington. Did you just hear all the awes from the gentleman?
We love Paddington.
See?
We have new guests in the audience, in the studio right now. From City Theater's production of The Odd Couple, we have Zachary Gamble. Hi,
howdy.
Zachary.
Howdy, howdy.
We have Darwin Ragsdale.
Hello.
And we have Charles Dennis.
Hello.
All right. Who wants to tell me or my listeners what the heck The Odd Couple is about? I've never heard of it.
The Odd Couple is a classic American comedy by one of the most beloved playwrights of the back half of the 20th century, Mr. Neil Simon.
Good. You know what? One of the things I didn't say on the break when I was giving you the rules, that if I have to give you any instruction, I do it over the air because I need you to tilt that microphone so your mouth is right at the microphone so we can hear you.
Here we
go. Keep going.
Oh, wonderful.
Much better.
Well, it's a classic plot line. Two opposing forces meet and madcap comedy ensues.
Yeah. It's pretty great. It's an odd couple.
Oh, it's an odd couple.
So, but we're good friends. So I play Felix.
Okay.
And yeah. Zach plays
Oscar Madison.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm the clean one.
You're the clean one.
Yeah.
You're like Tony Randall.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to take your word for that.
Yeah.
I'll look him up afterwards.
Yeah. Yes, he's like Tony Randall.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. Tony yes, Randall Tony played Randall Felix is... in the series.
And Jack Klugman was... Oscar.
Never mind. Okay, I put my whole foot in my mouth.
No,
you didn't. It's okay. No, you just shows that we're old. That's all.
You have to be a person of a certain age.
No, we got Jack.
And Zach, you're playing Oscar.
Well, that's right.
Sports writer.
Sports writer and slob. Huge
and slob.
Slob.
Yeah, I actually love the poster. Do you know who designed that?
My guess would be Mr. Andy Barakowski, probably.
Barakowski? Yeah. I don't think so. Well, I don't know. Maybe
I did not know he designed it. But it is quite cleverly nice.
I like
nice.
It. It's got two shoes. One
it
nice
does.
And one not so nice.
Yes. Yep.
And so, Charles Dennis, we're talking about the odd couple. So, you know, I make me think that this show is a two-person show. But there are three of you here.
No, they got a group of friends who come for a weekly poker game. I'm Murray the Cop.
You're Murray the Cop.
I would say I'm the force who's trying to keep everyone together in this, who also, if you put food in front of him, no matter how nasty it is, he's probably going to put it in his mouth. we have friends of the poker game who, once Felix moves in with Oscar, they start to feel like maybe the forces in this house and this massive apartment in New York are starting to change for the worse, perhaps, or the better. Mm. And we also have two women in the production, actually three, because we've changed the gender of one of the roles. We have the Pigeon Sisters, who come in on a double date with these two men beside me, and chaos ensues as one of them maybe wants a more normal date, and one of them can't stop talking about his past trauma.
Yeah. Mm. And that's me, Felix. Yeah, going, actually, Felix is going through a divorce and whatnot.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
That's why he's moved in.
That's why
he needs a place to stay.
Yep, and Oscar yeah, how do you feel about that?
The experienced divorcee already shepherding his friend through 100%. This new crisis.
Yeah. Yep, and hilarity ensues.
So who is directing this lovely piece?
Tracy Hurd.
Tracy Hurd, wonderful. Ah. And how's the process been for you guys so far? Because y'all are opening pretty soon, right?
We open this Friday.
It's been going really well. I think the car is moving in the right direction. Everybody's having a good time. The vision is clear.
There's a car in the show?
The metaphorical.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. I knew what you meant, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
But yeah, no, she's been amazing. She has a vision and has been very clear on what she wants the show to be. And it's been so much fun performing with these with these cats here. It's awesome.
So are any of you familiar with the television series?
Yes, I am.
I am mostly.
I think I'm the only one of us.
I've never
familiar.
Seen the movie, never seen television, never.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, this is my first.
I was addicted. I mean, I am of that era.
I was addicted to it also.
I have watched every single episode more than once. Because when I was in New York and when it finally came on reruns on Channel 11, I was watching them.
It was the Seinfeld before the Seinfeld.
It was indeed.
To be honest, like, that was the thing with the
and
Friends
the movie
of the
was Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Lemon and Matthau. If we were going to go with the original production, I'd be the Paul Dooley of the production.
I haven't heard Paul Dooley in a while.
Yeah. So what fun. So
it's a fun piece.
So which character did you change the gender of?
Roy.
Roy,
mm-hmm. The accountant.
He's the accountant, yes.
Roy is now Rory.
I was about to say, is it Rory?
Rory.
Yeah, it's Rory.
And you love the name Rory.
I do love the name Rory.
She loves the Gilmore Girls. Yes, that's where Lisa
I love the Gilmore
going.
Girls, and Sarah Silverman's boyfriend's name is Rory.
Yeah, Lisa likes
nice. Rory. 1-2 punch right there.
I knew it.
Yep, it's one of those names that can go both ways.
Yeah, this show always makes me laugh. And it's even fun. You know, when it's a good show and you giggle when you can read it and giggle.
Yeah.
Even from stage directions and you giggle. And then when you see it happening, you laugh.
Yeah.
You chortle.
You do. You chortle for days.
Yes.
Just like you do when Pharaoh tells a joke.
Exactly.
You chortle for days.
You chortle for days.
So, yeah, I know that you had mentioned that the playwright is really well known. I'm not sure that you mentioned his name.
Mr. Neil Simon.
Neil Simon. You may have mentioned it, but I probably wasn't listening.
You know, if he works on it,
he might go somewhere.
Yeah, he's up and coming, right?
Yes.
He is.
Yes.
Yeah, brother of Danny Simon.
Is that true?
Yes, that is his brother's name.
I don't know.
Should I laugh? Is it true? What's happening?
So much of our show today, there have been references that I have not gotten.
What?
Like all of the Lost Boys stuff.
The fact you don't know who the actress Jamie Gertz is, I'm a little.
Then I don't know who Jamie Gertz is.
Jamie Gertz, like 10 out of 10, straight up hottie.
See, you're not
her
alone,
dad is
Lisa.
Walter Gertz, who runs all the improv comedy clubs in Chicago and everything, too.
Dude, I'm sorry. I apologize. This is, you know, it's my failures. So what is, what time period are y'all placing this in? Are you doing it in the period in which it was written?
Lisa.
It was written in 1960, and that's about when we're placing it.
Okay.
Yeah, premiered in 1965, and we're going right smack dab right there. When
so
it was
are you
premiered.
Wearing, well, you wouldn't, Darwin wouldn't, but does Oscar wearing a little thin tie? A little 1960s?
There is some tie action in the play. I don't think it's a thin tie, but yeah. Felix gets a pretty good tie.
Yeah, I get one tie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean Oscar. I meant Felix.
Yeah,
you get to wear the tie.
I get one tie, yeah.
No, you wouldn't wear a tie.
I have
what's wrong with you?
Bow ties. So
Felix is a bow tie.
It's a little twist.
You know what?
No pun intended.
I love a good bow tie.
Not done so much in the 60s. I don't think.
No, they're bow ties. My father, he would beg to differ in his photos from the 60s.
And yeah, are you wearing a cop's uniform?
I am for Act One, yes. Okay. Because we usually play this weekly poker game that I'm always on stage to take part in on Fridays after work. And so I, in Act One, am in cop uniform. But as the summer maybe goes on, since it takes place in the summer, maybe have changed into slightly more breathable garments.
Well, that is great. Remind me again.
Must be nice.
Remind me again what the dates are. When do you open? When do you close?
We open on May 1st.
May Day.
Close on May 17th.
That's right.
Wonderful. And where can folks go to get more information?
Well, we have a website at thecitytheater.org.
City Theater Austin.
Citytheateraustin.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for coming on. I hope to get by to see it.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Great. Amazing. Okay. That was Zachary Gamble, Darwin Ragsdale, and Charles Dennis, all of City Theater's production of The Odd Couple, opening on May 1st, plays through the 17th. For more information, you may visit citytheater.org. And I had to play this particular song, which Darwin and Zachary, you're not going to get. But I'm hoping other people will.
We're used to it.
We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and
that
Nicole.
That song's going to be in my head all day, Lisa.
I know. It does not go away.
No, it does not. It is an earworm.
Well, thank you for coming back and joining us. Really nice to have you here again.
I know. We're like,
are you here, are you
you
here
know,
for a while?
We're like beaches.
We are.
Except we're not dying.
Yeah, we're not. Well, I hope not. all right. Well, are you going to be with us for a while?
I shall be till like summertime.
Amazing.
But yes.
Well, great. Well, we have done it.
It's happened again.
Gone a whole hour. We've got, the other thing I forgot to say, I'm really falling down on the job. What a wonderful, International Folk Bazaar that Kim Simpson did on International Dance Day.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I danced a little bit today, so I feel internationally dancy.
And then coming up after us is Tracy Schultz. He's going to tell you what?
What's new?
He's going to tell you what's
on
new.
On What's New?
Yeah.
With Tracy Schultz.
Tracy always, he always amazes me because he gets some amazing interviews.
I don't know who he knows or what he does or how he makes it happen.
Everywhere.
But he's like a little interview ninja.
He is, and boy, I did not write the song that we have on here and where it's from, And oh my gosh, I can't remember.
Did you happen to play something from Paddington the Musical?
No,
for me?
It's from an album that just came out. It's a conceptual musical written by
I can't help
guy.
You out with that. That guy.
That guy, and it's sung by that girl and that guy.
Okay.
Andrew Lippa wrote it.
Okay.
And the song is from this particular thing coming up, which is a sung through musical that I can't remember the name of.
Okay.
But the song is also in the Andrew Lippa show, The Addams Family.
Oh, okay.
And this song is called, I have to look over here, Crazier Than You. Oh. We will see you next week when we look at what's happening
Than you.
Offstage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.